And the sound you're hearing is the amazing chorus of thousands of buzzing bees as they hover in and out of this hive. And it's a hive owned by Benny Myers, an urban beekeeper here in Tala. I've come here in Friarstown, just outside of Tala, to talk with Benny about beekeeping before I head about 5 kilometres southbound into the majestic valley of Glenasmole on the edge of the Wicklow Uplands, where I'll meet a zoologist who spent the past year finding out more about a tiny little parasitic worm that makes a home in the gut of our bumblebee species. But first, back to the buzzing. And Benny, the beekeeper, is here, or Ben the beekeeper, I gather people call you, is it?
Ben, yeah. Ben, most beekeepers call me Ben.
How many bees do you keep altogether here?
Yeah, I've eight hives.
Eight hives?
Eight
and
hives.
So how many would that be altogether?
I reckon there'd be about, at this time of the year, maybe 40 to 60,000 in each hive.
60,000? Right. That's incredible.
Yeah, they'd be at their peak now. They're at their strongest. There is a what they call the June gap, which is from then to May, the first fortnight in June.
Yeah.
When the hawthorn is gone and there's a sort of a slack time then for a fortnight. There's chestnuts here.
Beautiful chestnuts right behind us. Yeah,
and they get honey from that, and the hawthorn, of course. But then the clover comes in and they pick up again.
And it's the clover they really like, isn't it?
They love the clover, yeah. It's a runny sort of honey. Not everybody's taste, but neither is heather. I bring them up to the hill in August when the heather comes into bloom.
What kind of bees are they? What species of bees?
Just ordinary bees. They're not special bred bees like the Buckfast or McGillicuddy down in Moore South. He breeds what he calls the native black bee, which is the native Irish bee. He breeds them for docility and honey gathering, of course.
Because what you want is quiet bees. I mean, you don't want bees that are aggressive or anything like that.
No, most of them will be aggressive at times, but especially if you're handling them a lot. The more handling you do, the more aggressive they get. They don't like being disturbed, because you wouldn't like your house being pulled around either.
Although being stung by, what, 60,000 per hive? That's incredible.
I know, well, you wouldn't. We try, of course, not to get stung, because a bee stings you, he dies.
I know, it's
or
sad.
She dies, rather. Yeah. She'll die in a short time. People say that bees get to know you, but they don't. You get to know how to handle them. The least disturbance, of course, the less you do with them, the better. You see, not much you can do. There's not much the ordinary person can do about all you can do is breed from good bees.
Yeah.
And not breed from bad bees.
Yeah. Well, let's take the plunge and go on in. We're just going to walk into this field here. It's a lovely breeze this morning.
Isn't there a grand breeze? You see, you're up fairly high here and it's lovely and fresh.
Thanks.
You should never go near bees without being dressed.
Do you get stung much yourself?
No, we try not to get stung. We don't. Well, you see, if you dress yourself properly, you shouldn't get stung.
What's the most amount you've been stung?
Oh, I've been stung hundreds of times. Once when I was young, we always had bees at home in our own house. Someone said to me, we had them in boxes, not in beehives now, in boxes, and someone said to me, joking of course, that go down and drill holes in the top of the box and put another one the same size on top, you see. And of course I went down to drill the holes and they came out and they made an awful attack on me. And I went in and I met my mother in the door and she brushed them off me with a towel. But I was in bed for 3 weeks.
You weren't?
I couldn't, my whole face swelled up. My eyes shut up and everything, and
I
still got back into bees.
Because you've been keeping them for ages. How long have you been into beekeeping?
Well, I got my first swarm around 1958. A friend of mine came to me with looking for a box, actually, to put a swarm in. I had no box, so I said to him, come on down and we'll make a box, you see. So we started making the box, and he says, the hell with it. He says, do you want a swarm of bees?
And of course, I got it.
That was how I started back into them. But I started into them in a small way. But like most beginners, I got into them nearly too quick. I got too many hives.
And
I nearly got tired of them. But
is that how you start? You just get a hive and then you work from there?
You get a hive, or you buy a nucleus box with about six or seven frames in it. And then you put them in an ordinary hive which holds 10 frames.
Yeah.
And you put new frames behind it and they'll walk away and draw back onto the new.
Because when you have a hive, it's not that you're just leaving it there so that bees come to it from the outside.
Oh, no, they will come to it. Lots of people, and I do it too, leave out a bait hive. And it's a hive with three or four old combs in it that have been used. New combs are not much good, but an old comb now that the bees have been on and used,
They'll like
that'll attract them, yeah. Because anywhere bees were, it's always attracted to bees again. The smell of the wax or whatever it is. Even up in roofs now, bees get into it and they'll die out. But you're likely to get more back in.
And have you always then, since 1958, since you started, all your life you've been keeping bees?
Well, more or less, I've been in touch with them in some way or another, like, you know.
Yeah. What do you like about them?
I don't know. It's a sort of a thing, once you start at it, it's terrible hard to get away from.
Why?
I don't know what it is, but there's a lovely feeling about keeping bees, I think.
What is the feeling?
I don't know. You come out here now and you go over to the hives and there's a grand peaceful feeling about it. You know, you feel, and it's a challenge too, of course. It's a challenge all the time. Because you're either trying to stop them from swarming or do something else or putting supers on them if they haven't enough. You have to watch them all the time, you know.
It's like having a child.
Oh yes, you have to keep your eye on them. You get a love for them, actually.
Yeah.
Diggs in his book, I think, and he hit the nail on the head, said the beekeeper must first be a lover of bees. which stands to reason, like, because you wouldn't bother with him at all if you didn't get hooked on it.
No.
Yeah.
And what happens if you go away?
I'll go on holidays now. I won't go until the season is. I won't have the honey off, but the swarming season will be over. I'd never go in the middle, for instance, in June or July.
Have you ever been away from Ireland in June and July in your life?
No. No, we more or less time our holidays. Once it passes the middle of July now, I'm safe enough as far as swarming goes.
And what does your lovely wife think of this?
Oh, she's not too keen on the bees, but she has to put up with it.
Does she like honey?
Oh, she will eat honey sometimes, but we're not regular eaters of honey, although it's not good if you don't eat it regular. Lots of people put it on their porridge in the morning, you know, and things like that.
Comb honey is delicious.
The comb honey, of course, you put it on your bread like jam.
Yeah,
you cook
crunchy.
Some said it's the wax that's good for you when you have a cold. Bees collect stuff from trees called propolis. It's a sticky stuff. And they reckon they varnish the section, the comb honey, they varnished outside of it with that. And they reckon that's because it's a powerful disinfectant. It's an antibiotic, if you like. The bees varnish the sections with that, and they reckon that does you good.
Should we put our gear on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nothing as bad as going at a hive half-dressed and then have to leave in the middle of it and go and dress yourself, because by the time you come back, they're all upset, you see, and they're in a bad way.
And we're going to wear Wellington boots because they'll get at your ankles otherwise, will they?
Yes, so the neck for your ankles, and I don't want you to get stung, I say.
You're getting on a white suit, I see.
Yeah, white suit.
Why is white better?
White is better because the bees like white. They don't like anything dark colour, and especially not woolly stuff, because they've a lot of little things on their feet. Their bees' feet are not like ours, you know. They've got little things like claws all around the edge, and then in the middle there's a sticky pad.
In the middle of their foot?
In the middle of their foot, so that if they're on glass or something slippy, they can retract, pull in the claws and stick with the pad.
Yeah.
For walking up like a glass. Or
hold on to it, basically. Yeah.
And that sort of thing. And they get hooked up in your clothes and your hair as well, like, if you let them.
So they don't like furry things like wool and that kind of thing?
No. On their back legs, they have pollen baskets that they carry pollen in. And you'll see them when you go into the hive now, and you'll probably see them bringing in pollen. You don't want to be stung, of course, but you don't want the bees to sting you either, because they're dying every bee that stings you. And as well as that, they give off a smell, a pheromone, or however you like to call it, when a bee stings you, and it sets all others mad.
A warning, is it, to tell other bees to come?
It's like when we get frightened, the adrenaline flows, and they give off this scent. I put that on when I go over now. A bee sting has a whole lot of little barbs on it. It's like a fishing hook. When she sticks it in you, if you give her time, like, you'll often want to sting you in the hand now, and you'll give her time, and she'll go around in a ring and twist around, and she'll get the sting out and fly off. As well as the sting, they leave a little poison sack that's on the end of the sting, and that little poison sack, if you watch it when the bee is gone, even, it's pumping, it's pulsating, and it's pumping the poison into you.
And so that's what irritates you?
It is. And what you do then is, the minute the bee stings you, if you can, either with your nail or with the end of the hive tool, just scratch the sting out sideways. Don't catch it by the little thing, or you empty the poison sack down the sting into you.
So push it sideways?
Push it sideways with something blunt not too sharp like. And it pulls the sting out without doing much damage. This little gas cylinder, I never had one of these till last year. I saw someone with it and I thought it was great. This is the lad we use for to smoke the bees. We use smoke to quieten them. Bees in a forest, for instance, if there's a forest fire, the smoke, when they smell the smoke, they get frightened and they gorge themselves with honey. Some say that when they're gorged with honey, they feel a sort of heavy and drugged-like.
Like we would.
Yeah. The others say that when they're gorged with honey, they can't bend their... You see, their sting is in their tail. They can't bend their abdomen to get the sting into you. But
So either way, it works?
If it does get a bit hot, you pull a bit of green grass and put it in on top of it. Makes a lovely cool smoke.
So we're going to go in. Is there anything I should and shouldn't do?
Bees don't like you moving quick. You can move your hand slowly over a beehive and they don't take any notice of it. But they don't like things jerking and moving quickly.
And here we are.
You can see the books. Come on down and I'll show you. I'll show you a small hive. I'll show you a small hive with an old queen.
And do you make these hives yourself?
Most of them are homemade, yeah. And the most important thing is to have the measurements exactly right for a hive. I still work on old feet and inches because I never got down to converting them.
So what's the best way to make one?
Well, the inside walls, there should be what they call a bee space beside each frame. I'll show you when I open the hive
now. A bee space for them to get in and out?
It's about a quarter of an inch between the end of the frame and the edge of the hive, because they'll leave that gap open, whereas if it's wider, they'll build a comb in it.
If
it's smaller, they'll stick it with propolis. That's the important thing about a hive.
That has to be perfect.
Have the measurement perfect. This is an old queen now.
So you've got an upside down bottle inside the hive here.
That's a feeder. Well, there was. It's gone now, but there was sugar syrup in it.
You've just taken the feeder out, and what are you doing now?
I'm just going to show you the inside of a hive, what they're like.
And there are literally thousands of bees around us.
That's honey now in that frame there.
So that's a whole frame. What is it, about a foot and a half by foot?
It's 14 inches by 8. And it's full of honey. This is a frame now. I gave them a new one. They're drawing out the comb. You see, they're starting to draw that out. That lad there, see the big fella? That's a drone. That's a male bee.
Oh, the bigger one's about twice as big.
Yeah, he's a male bee. When the winter comes, they kick them all out.
They kick them out? Why?
They won't feed them through the winter, so they kick them out about, usually in August.
And how do they do that?
First of all, they stop feeding them until they're weak. And when they're weak, then they throw them, just bring them to the edge of the hive and throw them out.
Evicted?
Evict them, yeah. There now is a bee. See that bee with his pollen baskets full of pollen?
Yes. So either side is this sort of yellow sack?
Yeah. They carry it in their basket and they store it in the hive.
We're here in the corner of the field. If one bee flies off and finds a particularly rich source of nectar, how do they tell the others, or do they tell the others?
Oh, they do. They come back and they give samples to the bees in the hive and they do a dance.
Do a dance?
They dance on the comb. It's sort of a figure eight of a dance, and then they run in a straight line. And the straight line is in relation to the sun. They know where the sun is even when you can't see it. They're able to send them straight to where they have found this source. And the samples give the quality of the honey, like, you know. And the other bees will all head straight for that direction.
Isn't that absolutely amazing?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. It's an amazing adaptation to make sure that everyone knows then that there is
a rich source of flowers
nearby.
Yeah.
And would you swap queens with other beekeepers as well? I mean, is that part of what you do?
Well, no, but some men sell bees, sell queens. If I took that queen out of that hive there, for instance, and introduced one of his black queens, after a while, all the bees in that hive would be his bee, because she's the only mother, you see, and you have to introduce her gradually. You put her in a cage, and there's a bit of candy, and they'll eat the candy, and it takes them 2 or 3 days. And by the time they have the candy eaten, the queen will have got the same scent as the bees in the hive, so they'll accept her then.
So you just introduce her to the hive first?
I introduce her, yeah. See, if you have a bad queen that's either too vicious or not working well, and you want a good one, you buy the queen and you take out the bad one and introduce the good one.
So all of these hives are active and these are all going to give you some honey?
Hopefully. That one there now, that's a young queen. That, for some reason, that queen died out during the winter.
And, number 10.
Yeah, she died out for some reason. I don't know. Often when I bring him to the hill, I come back with a hive that's queenless, or maybe two.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Maybe it's the moving up or down, the travelling, like, or she might be lost or something like that. But in any case, you see, that time of the year in September, you can do nothing because the drones are all gone.
Yeah.
You can't rear a young queen then till the spring. What happened there was there was only a few bees in the spring, and I gave it brood from another hive, and I built it up without having any queen, like. And eventually then I introduced the queen to her. So that's a young queen reared this year.
And if they reject the queen, what happens? Will they kill her?
They kill her, yeah. They do what they call balling. They ball the queen.
What does that mean?
The hug her to death, actually. They put their
they get her
in the middle of a ball, yeah. And the ball tightens on her, and they kill her that way.
It's like, yeah, I'd love that.
Would you?
I'd love to be hugged to death.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's about the size of a golf ball. If you just put a queen in there now, for instance, they'd do this balling, as they call it, immediately. They call it balling the queen.
Going, you can see them with their yellow.
See the yellow stuff on their legs.
And there's a drone, am I right?
The drone, a big lad.
And here to the side, to the right,
That's another old queen. That's another old queen that I took out of a hive, and I just have her there to keep her going. Like, one of the things I don't like about beekeeping is killing queens, but it has to be done sometimes.
Would the bees swap around the different hives? Would they go to different hives, or are they very faithful?
No, they're not allowed in. They won't be allowed in. Sometimes they'll be allowed in. Sometimes if you can switch stands, as they call it, if there's a honey flow on, but only when there's honey coming in. If you had a weak hive there and a stronger one down here, you could switch stands.
Benny, thank you so much for showing me that. It's been an amazing experience. My first time in a hive. Do they get many parasites? I mean, do they get affected by illness at all?
Oh, they do. There are a whole lot of diseases of bees, but lucky enough, we don't have many of them here. But they have this new thing came in a few years ago, varroa. It's like a little spider, eight legged lad, and he breeds in the cell with the bee. And he's not a good lad, but we treat for it. We treat with Beveral, and there's a whole lot. They're experimenting with a whole lot of different things to see which is the best thing to treat him with.
Because that would ruin the hive, would it?
Oh yeah, if you don't treat them now, they'll be gone, and that's why all the wild bees are dead nearly. They nearly all died out.
Well, I'm going to carry on up now towards Glenismole Valley to meet a parasitologist who's looking at another bee species, the bumblebee, which I'm sure you get around here as well.
Oh, we do, yeah. Yep. And there seem to be a good many of them this year. They're lovely things, yeah. For pollinating now, they're even better than our bees because they work in cooler climates. They work in late in the evening and early in the morning when these lads are
fast asleep.
Well, they don't go out unless the temperature is fairly high.
The wonderful Benny talking to me earlier. Well, as I said, I've walked about 5 kilometres from Talla to here in Glenismole Valley. The River Dodder flows through this valley, and it's been impounded to form 2 reservoirs that supply water to the capital city. Around the reservoirs, there are some semi-natural broadleaf woodlands, including alder, willow, beautiful yellow iris, and the horsetail. But it's not for the trees that I've come up here. I'm here because this is the study site of parasitologist Michael Kelly, who's been investigating a little worm parasite called Spherularia bombi that infects the bumblebee species. And Michael joins me now. And Michael, earlier I was speaking to Benny, and Benny keeps honeybees, but what you're looking at here in beautiful Glenismole Valley is something completely different. You're looking at the bumblebee.
Absolutely. The biggest difference is they don't make honey, but visually the bumblebees are much bigger and much fluffier. As the name suggests, there you will see them bumbling around. They fly mostly in straight lines, and you'll see them quite often hitting things.
Thank you. Now we're going to walk along where you collect your specimens, your bumblebees, for this project you're doing, your PhD on the parasite of this bumblebee. What size is this parasite?
The worm itself is actually very small. If you compare the bumblebee queen to the size of a person, the worm itself would probably be the size of your finger, but when the parasite is inside the queen and is in full reproductive phase, the parasite swells to about the size of your arm. Imagine that being stuck inside your stomach.
That is enormous.
It is. Insects seem to be able to survive with very large things inside them. There's a number of parasitic wasps which lay their eggs inside spiders and insects. The wasp grows inside the the insect for a long period of time and eventually emerges. The size difference is it's huge wasp inside a little insect.
We are, as I said, we're in Glenismoe Valley, coming up to the reservoir. Why is this place particularly good for bumblebees?
It's wonderful for a variety of bumblebee species, just because the plants here haven't changed for a very long period of time. The bumblebees have plenty of flowers and a large space for them to find places to hibernate and start nests.
I mean, you can see here to the left, there is a huge amount of ferns. There are a lot of nettles. There are some foxgloves over there as well, some lovely purple foxgloves. So obviously there is, as you say, a wide variety of plants that they can use in order to feed in the rest.
Absolutely. The best ones for bumblebees are plants with lots of little clusters of flowers. They don't like anything too delicate. They'll need a good landing pad.
Just because too big.
Exactly. They're not particularly good flyers.
Now, the parasite that you're looking at is called Sphaerolaria bombi, this tiny little worm. Oh, does it only affect the bumblebee species?
It seems to be in all of the different bumblebee species have been infected by this parasite.
And when you say all the bumblebee species, how many are in Ireland?
In the region of 10 to 15 species. About six that I would say I'd find in places in town, and four different ones that I would find out here. If you came down here maybe next spring, you'd probably see me running around with a net. It's a case of throwing a net over a plant with a bumblebee on it and just putting the bumblebee in a little vial.
And then taking it back and dissecting it and looking for these little parasites. Now, we're all used, I mean, I've seen bumblebees many a time and you see them on flowers and that kind of thing. But where do they live? I mean, where do they go when the sun falls and they're not feeding?
They will hopefully find themselves a little hole to live in. Quite often they can use a little mouse hole which they can stay in overnight. They might surprise a couple of mice occasionally. They'll start nests in verges, wherever you'd expect to find mouse holes and similar things. The larger species, Terrestris, will just go find a nice mouse hole, saves digging a hole yourself, and start the colony there. The queen will be safe in her nest. Lots of workers are out at the minute collecting food for her, and she'll be producing new queens and males. These will be around at the minute. You'll probably see the males on their little mating runs, waiting for a female to pick them up.
What does she do after she breeds?
Once the queens have mated, they will eat enough food so they can survive the winter and find a hole in which to hide themselves and hibernate for the whole winter.
So the queen goes off and hibernates when? Around August time or something, is it?
July, August, yes. She's just looking for somewhere that'll be pretty stable for the winter. She will probably dig her own hole in this case, something, say, on a north-facing bank, just so that she won't get woken up in the middle of winter by a strong sun.
Oh, how interesting. So she actually locates herself so that she can stay asleep.
Absolutely. While she's hibernating in the soil, that's where the parasite will infect her.
So she is hibernating, and this is when the parasite attacks, if you like. How does it get into her?
It could be through the mouth, it could be through the anus, it could be through her air breathing holes, the spiracles. An uninfected queen will wake up in spring and everything's bright and perky. She'll go and feed and develop her ovaries and start a colony and produce workers that you'll see around on your flowers.
So when a parasite infects a queen, what happens?
She won't start to develop her ovaries at all. Any energy that would have gone towards making her own offspring are diverted to the parasite to make its offspring.
Now, how does the parasite do this? How does it change her behaviour, her instincts?
It's just a case of changing her hormones. We know that that hormones have a huge effect on human behaviour. It's exactly the same in insects. It stops her producing a hormone called juvenile hormone. This hormone would start her ovary production, and along with that she would then be looking to find a nest. Without it, she is just on her pre-programming before, and she'll just look for a hibernation site.
How amazing. So the parasite wants is the queen to stay in the hibernation site, to not move, so the parasite could just fill her abdomen with its eggs and feed off her, essentially.
Absolutely. If the queen is staying around the hibernation site, the parasite larvae can just emerge from her back end while she's in flight, and then they're set up and they're in the right place to infect the queens of next year.
What kind of effect does this have on the bumblebee population here in Glenismoe Valley? Presumably there's a lot of bumblebees with parasites inside of them. Is it detrimental to the overall bumblebee population?
To lose some of your number is always a bad thing. Actually, in Glenismoe, there are very few parasites from what I've collected so far. There are far more in the centre of town. The more common bumblebee species are hibernating in a more suitable area for the parasites. The soil of, say, Merrion Square or Botanic Garden somewhere, and these will be heavily infested areas by the parasite larvae. Out here, there's far greater area for the bumblebees to hibernate in. so it's less likely that a parasite will be able to find the bumblebee queen when she's hibernating.
Why is it particularly important to find out about the parasites of the bumblebee? I mean, I can understand that if it was the honeybee, but why is it important in terms of the bumblebee population around the country?
Bumblebees don't seem as important because we can't see what they produce, but they are incredibly important pollinators of many different plants and certainly some crops that we do depend on, the tomato plant and peppers. And this parasite, which has such a great impact on the bumblebee population, we need to know what effect it's having on the bumblebee species as a whole. And we absolutely need to know what effect the parasite is having, since it is a big effect. Each queen infected is not starting a colony. Need to know whether that's a detrimental thing to the population or whether it's actually helping rarer species.
Shanksmere was presented and produced by Ella McSweeney, and the programme was first broadcast in July 2006.